we're starting to run out of time, so I want to quickly go to Toys for Peace.
Okay.
Take the turnpike through New Jersey, where it meets the Garden State. If you take exit 11 there, instead of going straight, you can visit Sayreville, where Diana, mother of two, saw what war can do to kids, and did what she had to do, because we've got to learn to live in peace someday. Maybe soldiers with toys, not guns, will find a better way. She said school children in Sayreville should give a toy or two to the children in Iraq, because they have so very few. Diane's neighbor Karen agreed. Soon a movement grew. Would the schools go along? What else could the school board do? Because we've got to learn to live in peace someday. Maybe soldiers with toys, not guns, will find a better way. So they set up big containers in the schools in Sayreville. It really was inspiring how quickly they would fill. Sarah brought her favorite doll. She told her not to cry. Soon she'd have a new best friend. She kissed that doll goodbye. Because we've got to learn to live in peace someday. Maybe soldiers with toys, not guns, will find a better way. The colonel said, let's do it. Yes, we will try your plan. Our soldiers can give out toys in Iraq and Afghanistan. Those soldiers love to meet the kids. They hope their visits increase. When you make a child smile, you build a bridge to peace. Because we have got to learn to live in peace someday. Maybe soldiers with toys, not guns, will find a better way. Take the turnpike through New Jersey, where it meets the Garden State. If you take exit 11 there, instead of going straight, you can visit Sayreville, where Diana, mother of two, saw what war can do to kids and did what she had to do.
Now, there was another background vocalist on that that we haven't, that wasn't on any of the other songs. Who was that?
Well, Pete Seeger and I had played a couple of shows a few years back together, and we're doing a good bit of talking because there was some downtime around that. And I told Pete about these women in Sayreville, New Jersey, who had decided that since they were stuck in the suburbs and couldn't really do too much because they had young children in the school system, that a real good way to work for peace would be to get the kids to be aware of the issues and to start feeling them and care about peace. So they came up with a plan that children in the schools in Sayreville could give toys to children in Iraq, and that this way those kids would really understand what this war means on terms that were real for them, and also it might help make peacemakers of the future and so forth. So they organized a toys drive, and it was very successful, and there were a lot of wonderful stories that came out of it. And there also were a number of soldiers who became much more friendly to the Iraqi people because they now were connecting to them through the toys drive. They would meet families of children, and these soldiers, remember, are mostly recruited right out of high schools themselves. So
yeah.
So they were really able to connect and relate to the brothers and sisters of the younger children, and things changed a lot. It wasn't as scary over there for them too. So these women were pretty smart. They got an awful lot out of doing this. And Pete was very excited about the story, and he said, "Well, you know, we have to write a song." No, what he said was, "If Woody Guthrie were around, he would have written a ballad about it." And I said, "Well, Pete, you know, you were Woody's friend. You write a ballad about it." So he enlisted me, and he said, "Well, we're just going to write a ballad about it now." And he started off. So he said, "Ray, where is this Sayreville, New Jersey? What exit of the turnpike?" And I said, "Well, it's not really on the turnpike." "Oh, that doesn't matter. What's the closest exit?" So that's how we got the thing started. And then after that, a kind of an interesting thing happened, because I think most of the world knows Pete as one of the world's greatest folk people. But he actually is very musically sophisticated and had a lot of musical training himself. So we wound up doing virtually all the writing on paper. It wasn't the kind of thing where we sat around and jammed and came up with lines. It was more like sending sheet music back and forth for several months after the original try of doing the song. Wow. And a lot of the changes that Pete was focusing on were changes in syncopation of the song, you know, how much emphasis you put on different beats and sounds within the music. And that was, I think, the thing that held the song up for a whole last month, just changing back and forth how we were going to do that, until we finally both agreed that we could sign off on it. It looked good to us, sounded good to us, and we would let it out in the world and see what happens.
That's really cool. Do other people cover your songs?
Yes. In fact, this song is covered by Hallie Hammer, who's a wonderful folk singer out in Berkeley, California. And she has put it on a CD, which has been getting around as well. And some other people have been asking me about doing this one. And then there are many other songs that have been covered either in recording or in concert. And I know that, for example, Mercy Van Vleck has been singing a couple of them around. And
she loves Three Harbors.
I like that a lot, because one of the best things for a songwriter is, you know, we think of ourselves as the people who get the song together, but we don't necessarily think of ourselves as the only one who should be singing it. So it's great news when you find out that somebody else is not only singing it, but has interpreted it a different way, has put something into it that you didn't have before. Because that's really where a lot of us live. We want to see the song grow and develop and change and become, you know, as something more than any one of us could have invented.
Which I would imagine, you know, there's some people who might listen to, you know, any song and go, "Oh, I'd like to sing this, but I would do it differently." And then they think, "Oh, I better not." You know, they don't want to piss somebody off. But clearly they wouldn't be making you pissed off at all.
Yeah, and I think that when you think about it, that's been done so much even in commercial music. Look at the some kinds of examples. Ray Charles singing Eleanor Rigby. a very, you know, unusual selection, a very different kind of song for his repertoire, but fantastic, you know, a whole new take on it that made it over again a new song. So I think that's a real good way to go.
Well, we're running out of time, and so we're not going to be able to get to your songs about prisons or Social Security or electronic voting or the worldwide water crisis or any of your other environmental songs. So, when was that concert again?
Well, I think that's the place that you can hear those and many, many others. We're going to have a blast over there.
So there's a lot more we could talk about using music to empower people, to change the world, and how much powerful it is. But let's go out with a song instead. The Safe Thing. You had a story about that.
Well, I think people should realize just how important it is to speak out on issues and how critical this time is for our right to do that. And people should be watchful of all this legislation and of all this activity that's putting a chill on people speaking their minds. And one picture that I have that this drives that home to me relates to the story about James Cameron, who in 1930 was in a jail in Marion, Indiana with two other men. And they were all accused of robbery and such things. An angry mob of people dragged them out of the jail and began hanging them. And two of the men died by hanging. And they were getting the rope ready for Cameron when out of this mob of a couple thousand people now, one voice cried out. He's a good man. He couldn't have done it. He couldn't be guilty. And amazingly, it stilled the crowd, and they just decided to sort of leave it alone. So he was put back into the jail. His life was spared because one person spoke out. And then the consequences of that were even more incredible, because he went on to become known as Dr. Cameron, and the man who founded America's Black Holocaust Museum in 1988. He dedicated his whole life to promoting civil rights and racial harmony. He also documented many of the injustices suffered by people of African descent and people of color in this country. So all of that really very much happened because somebody spoke up.
Well, that's a great story.
I asked him if he'd help us to spread the word around of the thousands not permitted to be free. They're jailed without charges, held in secret without rights. He said, no, sorry, not me. It's the safe thing to do, learn to look the other way. Pretend you don't know, got nothing to say. There's a place where they teach torture, a military school. Its graduates make lots of people die. We've got to close it down. This petition's worth a try. He said, no, sorry, goodbye. It's the safe thing to do. Learn to look the other way. Pretend you don't know. Got nothing to say. Causes, and he's not a political man. He didn't just turn and walk away. He ran. Watches TV reruns behind the bolted door, in his big chair by the artificial plants. He keeps the shades pulled down if anybody calls. He says, no, sorry, I can't. It's the safe thing to do, learn to look the other way. Pretend you don't know, got nothing to say, got nothing to say, got nothing.
Well, thank you, Ray. And now, when is that concert again?
It's April 12th. It's Saturday, 8 p.m., People's Voice Cafe at the Workman's Circle, 45 East 33rd Street between Park and Madison.
And you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. And I'm Ken Gale, and I've been with Ray Corona. And you can hear the show for two more weeks on archive.wbai.org.